content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kurt Benroot from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, a team of volunteer readers will be reading short science fiction stories. We call our program Science Fiction Shorts, and it will be available in podcast after the broadcast.
I'm Joe Campo. This is Creation Myth by Paul Starkey. Love. Forgive me. The progenitors are long gone, yet we still rely on their language. The word doesn't do justice to the depth of our feelings, but it's the best description we have. It is my understanding that amongst the progenitors, true love was often about chance encounters. So it was with us. Her basic chassis was an X206 model Scrivener. A lucky find, buried in an Opsahl yard. Of course, she recalls discovering the remains of a bellhop in a ruined Chicago hotel. That supposedly formed the basis of my first build. I had to root through the craniums of several dozen Harvard tutors to find enough memory expansion packs that hadn't begun to degrade. I say that's why she loves Shakespeare. She recollects ripping the linguistic module from a still-warm gigolo in New Orleans. She jokes, "That's why I'm so foul-mouthed." Her personality is eclectic, because I created it piecemeal. She believes the same about mine. We each believe we created the other. One of us must be in error, yet neither of us can accept this. Unless we are both wrong. Unless we are the final creations of the final progenitor, each programmed to think they created the other. Is that why we love one another? Can we only love something we feel responsible for? Does it matter in the end? We are building a child. We will love him, and he will know he is the product of our shared love, our shared knowledge. He will be the first of many. I like to think the progenitors would be proud.
I'm Joanna LaForgia, and I will be reading Pieces of My Body by Caroline M. Yoakum. I gave my left arm to Elizabeth. You've never met her, but she was my dearest childhood friend. After my disembodiment party, she went home to London and put it on her end table, hand side down, with a lampshade made of green velvet and children's nightmares. The nightmares gnawed at the nerve endings on my shoulder, or maybe the unpleasant sensation was my longing for Elizabeth, or perhaps the scab was itchy. The arm was the first part of me to be removed, so it was hard to be sure what each sensation meant. My long-ago first boyfriend, Michael, was surprisingly squeamish, so I gave him my hair, thinking that it would be bloodless and therefore more appealing. He stuffed it in a plastic bag and took it home to Houston. But then he threw it away. Inside the plastic bag, the hair will never weave itself into the dirt and sing lullabies to earthworms. It will never tangle in a shower drain and capture off-key songs. You know how fond I was of my hair, so you will appreciate how angry I was to see it wasted. Let us never speak of Michael again. Tim and Jim and Annabelle and Nora, did you meet them when we were in college? Have become so close as to be practically a single entity, and they each got a finger from my right hand. They are in San Francisco, which is where I would live if location was an attribute that I could still possess. Tim uses his finger to thumb wrestle with Nora. even though technically it isn't a thumb wrestling because he has an index finger. My fingers are happy that they get to be together, although they miss the middle finger, which I mailed to Michael, of whom we are not speaking because he isn't worth the words. My coworker Courtney got my right leg because I couldn't think of anything better, and she left my disembodiment party in something of a hurry. She was like that, always dashing off, so maybe an extra leg wasn't such a bad gift after all. Courtney put the leg in a freezer in her Montana basement, nestled in among the ducks and deer she and her husband killed on hunting trips. Ice crystals transform my skin into a delicate lace, which the deer might lick like salt if they could control their frozen tongues. Lee asked for my heart, which I was saving for you until I thought of something better. When I gave it to him, he sprinkled it with salt and ate it, raw and bleeding. Then he went back to Germany. It was an interesting experience, being digested on a transatlantic flight. Don't look at me like that. Lee is from when we were separated. It is your own fault for kicking me out. My brother Andrew got my stomach, with my esophagus still attached. He loves both food and music, so I thought he might fill my stomach with honey or play my upper digestive tract like bagpipes. Instead, he put his childhood memories into marbles and dropped them down my esophagus one by one. The marbles clinked together in my stomach long after all the memories have been absorbed. I gave my neighbor Deb my teeth because she likes little things that fit in glass jars. She planted the teeth in her garden and waters them with root beer. Every night at midnight, she puts her nose up to the dirt and looks for any sign of plants. I'm not sure what she thinks will grow, but so far nothing has come of it. Our daughter Shreya was the most difficult to decide. Nothing seemed to suit her. She clearly shouldn't have a leg or a shoulder or a torso. No, definitely something smaller, more delicate. In the end, I gave her my three favorite freckles, which she wore on the back of her hand when she boarded the plane to Bangalore. She shared two of the freckles with our granddaughter, who painted them gold and used them as earrings. The last freckle collapsed into a black hole, a gravitational singularity so small that Shreya accidentally dropped it down into the gap between two ceramic floor tiles, where it slowly eats away at the grout. You didn't come to my disembodiment party to get your piece of me. You cling to your body even as it fails you, dragging you inevitably closer to a final and unending death. I mailed my eyes to you in a package filled with single-serving bags of those potato chips you like to eat, which are better padding than styrofoam peanuts. I worried that you would throw my eyes away, and the last thing I'd see would be maggots burrowing into my pupils. But instead, you strung them like beads on a section of fishing line and wore them as a necklace. With eyes no longer mine, I see a forest of rowan and maple, overgrown with moss that weeps with rain. I used to find such things beautiful, but I do not miss this world we shared. I certainly do not miss my body, with its parts scattered around the world. There are some who argue that I no longer feel emotion, but moths eat holes in the fabric of my disembodied consciousness. The goldfish of my past swims in restless circles as it drowns in a bowl of whiskey. I miss you. If you change your mind before you die, invite me to your disembodiment party. I will take anything, an eyelash or a kidney, your left ear or 16 neurons from the cortex of your brain. It will be all the body that I have.
My name is Larry Bliss. I'll be reading One Alien's Wreckage by Mary E. Loud. Chorrep's round feathered face stared down at the contents of the cryopod, and her wide copper eyes narrowed. She had been expecting to find valuable cargo for salvage. Instead, all she saw was a squirmy green-fleshed larva about the length of Chorrep's upper wing. "Anything in there?" Amy called out. She was another space wreck scavenger. Usually, Chorrep didn't like to share her finds, but Amy's cruiser had arrived seconds before her own at the charred remains of this shuttle, smashed into asteroid 835. So, Chorrep had puffed up her breast feathers, squawked a good story about avian authority in this sector, and been relieved when Amy agreed to share the find rather than insist on her rightful claim. "It's just a larval version of the Lepidopteran aliens who owns this vessel," Chorrep chuffed. "It's their kid?" Amy said, pushing Chorrep aside to see the larva for herself. The pink skin between her small blue eyes creased. "Damn, an orphan now." Chorrep grasped one end of the cryo chamber with her strong lower wings and said, "You want this, or can I have it? Either way, it's a heavy piece of equipment, so we should move it together. We can dump the larva out and leave it in the wreckage." "Are you kidding?" Amy said. Chorrep's owlish eyes blinked. "No? I mean, it won't be dangerous to us. Look at it." Following her own advice, Chorrep looked down at the helpless green caterpillar-like thing again. It kind of made her hungry. If it were smaller, say, only a talon's length long, and she had a whole bowl full of them. Chorrep clacked her beak hungrily. "It'll die," Amy said. Chorrep wasn't terribly familiar with human tonal communication, but Amy's voice had raised in pitch and taken on an irritating quality. "If you're worried about cruelty," Chorrep conceded, raising a talon toward the larva, "I suppose I can kill it now so it won't suffer from starvation." Before Chorrep could close her claws on the larva, Amy's pink-skinned fingers darted out and scooped it up. She cradled the caterpillar-like creature in her arms, rocking it and making little cooing sounds to it. "Such smooth skin," Amy said. Looking up at Chorrep, she asked, "Is this really a larval version of the aliens we saw crushed in the cockpit? It's going to grow huge, colorful wings like that?" Chorrep nodded, unsure what was happening here. "Amazing," Amy breathed, staring down at the caterpillar creature in her arms again. "You're going to be beautiful," she said. Was the human actually talking to the infant larva? Amazing, Chorrep thought. Apparently, the human valued this alien baby. How odd. Suddenly, a thought struck Chorrep. "Hey, I'll trade you the larva for the cryopod." As addled as the human seemed by the presence of an alien baby, she still shot Chorrep a look that meant she could see right through that gambit. "No doing. You were going to leave it here, so I get it for free. Trade something else for the cryo chamber." Chorrep grumbled. She was really off her game today. But at least she wasn't as crazy as this human. Amy wandered out of the crashed ship's cargo back, back to the docking port, and onto her own ship, where she called up a view screen and immediately sent a vid message to Crossroads Station, all the while bouncing the squirming larva on her hip. "This is Salvager 41, and I found a survivor in the wreckage on asteroid 835, an infant. Could you search the databases and send me any information about whether anyone's looking for this infant? Anyone I can return it to? Any information about custody, really. Thanks and out." Chorrep chittered. She'd followed the human out of curiosity, and now it all made sense. "You're going to hold it for ransom?" she asked, admiringly. Before Amy could answer, the viewscreen lit up with an image of a reptilian alien. Salvager 41, we've checked the records, and the crashed shuttle on asteroid 835 was registered as Lyka-4, a species that doesn't have a centralized representation in the expansion. They show up as traders and cargo haulers occasionally, but there's no one for us to contact regarding this matter. If you bring the infant to us, we can enroll it in the fosterage. Otherwise, under salvage rights, you can claim it as your own. However, you will be expected to pass several examinations regarding your fitness as an adoptive parent to an alternate species before the arrangement can be made permanent. Over and out. Chorif chuckled at how the human's plan had backfired on her. The upward curve to her fleshy lips was clearly an expression of her disappointment. "I think I'll name you Lilalai," Amy said.
I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn, and I'll be reading Planning for Your Retirement by Nikki Drayden. I bet you thought you'd be enjoying your golden years, traipsing through the lush forests of Belize, admiring the Venus de Milo with your own two eyes, enjoying a game of low-grav shuffleboard on Proxima Colony. All those things you were too busy working your tail off to enjoy. Yes, your retirement is right around the corner, and fortunately, you've put yourself in quite the position. Fully funded retirement accounts, paid for housing, luxury car purchased in cash, financial freedom. Unfortunately, it seems the universe has dealt you a cruel hand. Please, don't sit up. The nurses know I'm here. They're the ones who told me about you. They know my type. No visitors, no flowers, no balloons. A nice get-well card from your stockbroker. See, you're the perfect candidate for a last-ditch procedure, a fail-safe, if you will, a chance to extend your life and enjoy the wealth you've accumulated over the years. I'm talking about a new body, one that won't betray you when you need it the most. A body with a lean physique, maybe a decade or two younger than the sack you're carrying around now. But not so young that your colleagues will suspect more than a very talented plastic surgeon. The C word? Of course not. Human cloning is illegal. All we are doing is making a backup copy of your brain and storing it in a flesh-based container that may happen to share certain physical traits with you. You're entitled to a backup copy of your memories and thoughts, are you not? There's been a legal precedent set in the matter, just like you're allowed to make a backup of copyrighted media. All you have to do is apply for a copyright on the contents of your mind, and sign this waiver, indemnifying us from any legal issues that might occur. Like what kind of issues? Well, for one, if this flesh-based container happens to escape from our storage facility and happens to strategically involve itself in various aspects of your life, well, we can't rightly be held responsible for that now, can we? Yes, I didn't think so. Unfortunately, our backup process is quite expensive, but many folks have been able to successfully take a loan from their 401ks to fund the process, or have taken out a home equity line of credit, or sold their cars and other valuable assets. Most often, all of the above. But think of your golden years spent doing the things you'd always thought there was time to do. What's that worth to you? Of course, this likely means you will need to work for several more decades to pay off the loans. You're in no shape for that right now. But I sense a miraculous recovery in your near future. Do I not? Perfect. I'll get a nurse in here to do a blood draw and get started on the process. I'd love to stay and chat, but I'm afraid I'm already late for my next appointment, and I can't afford to miss one. I've got bills to pay, a load of debt to work off, and nothing but years of health in front of me. Actually, I'm not really supposed to mention this, but the commissions here are excellent. So if down the line you find yourself in need of a second job, or more likely a third, give me a call. Honestly, I could really use the referral bonus. If I'm lucky and stick to a modest budget, I'll be able to retire for a second time when I'm 123, and this time I swear I'll get the chance to enjoy it.
This is Steve Lord reading Uber by Sean Williams. Hop in, mate! I double-checked the app. My driver was supposedly Edward in a white Camry. His photo matched, but if the car had ever been white, it wasn't now. Down the passenger side trailed what looked like giant claw marks. Seriously? Just superficial. Tom, is it? It seemed wrong to send him packing, and beside, that would hurt my ranking. The interior of the car was little better than the exterior, smelling of molten plastic and covered in what looked suspiciously like ash. Forgive the mess, mate. Been a bad day. Edward looked oddly familiar, but I couldn't place him. He was bearded, weathered, and dressed in camo gear. Cosplay? I ventured. Fury Road, perhaps. Edward grinned. He was missing a tooth. I know what that is. Drove a bunch home from Comic-Con last month. They were a riot. We pulled away from the curb, the screen on Edward's app guiding him through the suburban streets, heading for the city. His phone was a model I didn't recognize, with a crack right across its face. You haven't figured it out yet, Edward said, looking at me sideways as he drove. If it's not cosplay, you've had a really bad day. A bad life, mate, he said, but that's not what I'm talking about. Where you've seen me before? I turned to face him full on. How? You'll know how when you know why. As to the car, well, people like me, we come from the edges, where it's thin. Reality, I mean. Some of us go back and forth, world to world. It's not as hard as you think. He took a corner, and I took a hard look at him. Edward seemed the kind of guy who might catch, kill, and clean an animal with his bare hands, but wouldn't waste time burdening a stranger with his brand of crazy. You're having me on. Nah, you'll see us everywhere. Now you know to look. Beggars, streetwalkers, lunatics, survivalists, all types. Doing what? Well, I'm one of the lucky ones. Got a car, so I can work. Plenty less fortunate. He shrugged expressively, and I decided to play along. That would explain missing people. They go too close to the edges and, what, fall off? More like stepping through honey. Yeah, I guess it might explain a few, but the traffic is mainly one way. Believe me, no one would willingly go where I come from. It's the same for most. If you're not careful, you end up with one of the really shithouse universes. I thought of our collapsing environmental and recent political troubles. This isn't one of them? Land of milk and honey. And doesn't the government know it? Calling us freeloaders, job stealers, terrorists, whatever. But the way we see it, you need us just as much as we need you. Those of us with families and friends back home are desperate. We'll do anything. Right, I thought. Activism plus a captive audience of one. Cute. Better than passing the time chatting about kids that might be imaginary or in obstinate silence, I guessed. I don't want to argue with you, I said, but what about disease? Isn't that a concern? Yeah, well, there have been some fuck-ups. Would you personally slam the door on a parallel Earth full of people dying from AIDS, though? When the bug's probably going to leak through anyway? When the cure might be over here in your science or in your genes? The smart fellow's share is on every dish, as my daddo used to say. If he was trying to get a reaction, he succeeded. What did you say? You heard me. That proverb. My grandfather used to say it, too. And you couldn't say daddo either, could you? So you called him daddo instead. Weird, huh? I looked at him again, and this time really looked at him, through the beard and the tan and the scars. It's impossible. The app says Edward. Fake ID, mate, or else I'd be out on my ear. But you're... you. Yes. From a parallel world. Saw our name and face pop up in the app, and I thought, why not? You're not going to kill you and take over your life? Hardly worth the bother. I'd inevitably slip up, and now I'd be in a whole world of trouble. And in return, you won't turn me in? No, of course I won't. That would be impossible, morally and practically. I had deadlines to meet, and the process of calling the dogs on one's hard-done-by twin would undoubtedly take more than a phone call to immigration. What happened? I mean, how did you... I become you? Edward, the alternate Tom, waved philosophically with his left hand, a gesture I too made when words were inadequate. Hot war in the Middle East, 1986. Nasty. We don't think about it much anymore. Got bigger things to worry about. Is there anything I can do? You'll figure it out. Oh, hey, we're here. Nice joint. The car pulled to a halt. Work's facade seemed particularly hollow this morning, as I considered the lot of my other selves and people like him. If my reality really wasn't as terrible here as everyone seemed to think, I swore to be more appreciative and kinder to those less fortunate. It's been something, I said, holding out my hand. You said it, mate. Take it easy. The battered old Camry drove off up the street, and I remembered my question, my obligation. I reached into my pocket and pulled out my phone. There was his face. My face. Old before its time. Under the Ride Complete banner. I tapped the screen. 5 stars.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Science Fiction Shorts. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrood, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138.